Video game bang, video game bang, video game bang. Mega Ran. Live from the sack, it's the live, it's a fact. I'm putting rhymes on this track to put my guys on the map. Updates, geek news, tech talk, and reviews. They can summarize it so you ain't gotta breeze through. Listen once and you're forever fans. And I'm not saying it because their theme song features Mega Ran, the ultimate source of all geek media. Other podcasts, they just don't match up. Need proof? You can check the archives and catch up. Stats off the chain, we have rearranged the game. It'll never be the same. Now it's time to feel the
bang. What is up, my pizzas? Corey Vincent here, and I am back from not outer space. I'm back from Italy, and I want to thank everybody who helped hold the show down, including this man, David Webb. What's up?
What's going on? Oh, should I say buongiorno?
Buongiorno, ciao.
Ciao.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all I know.
I was probably super...
Spaghetti.
I was probably super offensive in Italy because I feel like when you go to another country, you need to... Like, I don't want to go there and be like, hey, ciao, amigo. Like, you know, like, you got to go out there and you got to try. And so I was like, hey, ciao, bella.
It's me, Mario.
Let's get a pizza pie.
Let's go.
Yeah. So, yeah. They didn't like me over there.
Yeah, they probably did not.
Speaking of not liking me over there, what is going on? Kyle, he returns back to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
I see what you put on the Reddit.
What did I put on the Reddit?
You're nice to my face.
I'm going to Reddit. They don't like me.
You go to competitive Overwatch Reddit and talk a bunch of trash.
You talk exclusively anti-shock things and say, they're not going to do well, Vancouver going to 4-0 them.
I didn't see you at the watch party. You had nothing better.
No, I didn't. I was watching at home with the High Noon friends.
Did you watch it at home?
I watched, yeah.
Was there like a little watch party?
Yeah, so we did like an online little watch party thing with some friends. Nice. So we were online doing that, chatting with some folks.
Needless to say, we'll talk a little bit about the Italy trip if it comes up. But the main thing on the mind is Overwatch League Season 2 has concluded. And if you notice, like, I was a little scatterbrained, we weren't doing all the shows necessarily, is because I was working a lot, getting stuff ready for social media and content for the Overwatch League Grand Finals, which were last weekend. And before we get to that, we got to introduce a brand new person to the podcast. We met her at the Silicon Valley Comic Con. You were there working, hanging out with Emma, and turns out you're a huge Overwatch fan. We started talking, and we were like, oh, yeah, I like Overwatch. You like Overwatch. You're like, oh, cool. I was like, oh, yeah, you're cosplay. We love cosplay. Wait, you're Sacramento? We're Sacramento. And then all of a sudden, the stars aligned, and you're on the show. Welcome, everybody. Bad Kitty Cosplay. What's up?
Hi.
This is your first podcast.
Yes.
Are you nervous?
Yes. Be gentle.
We are very good to learn with because we're not very... I mean, we've been doing this for a long time, but there's not a formula. We just talk.
That sounds good. Yeah. I can talk Overwatch. I'm ready.
We're have a lot easy to learn with, but we're not like the good, like, hey, let's follow this template to learn with.
So don't take what you learn here to another podcast.
Yeah.
Please don't.
Don't.
You will get Twitch banned.
And if you do, say that you were on the Filmlosophers.
Yes. Shout out to the Filmlosophers, everybody. So tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a longtime cosplayer up here. We have a lot of friends in common. You like design things that like Macy Rose has, like, wears and models and stuff. What do you do?
Yeah, that's how I met Macy. A mutual photographer introduced us. I needed a model to display one of my pieces for my senior project at Sac State. So I was doing, for that specific project, it was a series of headdresses, and I did these crazy, crazy horn headdresses, and she did a shoot with me, which was how we kind of met again-ish. I had met her at cons before, but we kind of bonded after that, me and her mom.
Everybody who knows her mom.
Her
mom and family's incredible. They're going to have a baby. Did you see that?
Yeah. Wow. That's insane.
That's crazy. She was just a baby the first time she was on the show. Like, we met her at the
first second anime, right?
No, it was Wizard the first
World.
Wizard World.
Oh, Wizard World. Yeah.
And that was her first convention ever, and I think it was our first convention ever.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of like the how we opened it, because we were shooting some stupid videos, and we were like, oh, cool. Game of Thrones cosplay. So talk about your Overwatch love, because that was the first, like, that's what we spent the most time talking about in San Jose. What's your love for this game?
Yeah, so as anybody that's a fan of Blizzard knows, anytime Blizzard reveals or shows off something new, you keep an eye out for it. So when they showed that E3 announcement trailer how many years ago, you know, kind of just teasing these characters and this art style and that it was going to be, you know, a console plus, you know, a PC game, I got really excited. So yeah. Fell in love day one after I saw that trailer, and I was hyped, and played the beta, and was even more hyped. And then, of course, they do their amazing animated shorts, which are just, they're so gorgeous. We need more, please. We're in season two.
I think it gets lost how great of a job they did marketing that game at the beginning. That first trailer where they were kind of like going through the different characters and showing like the first ever in-game stuff from it. I remember everybody I talked to like identified with a different character and was like hyped about that one.
Yeah.
For me, it was Hanzo. I was like, oh my god, bow and arrow guy, just climb that wall, dude. You know, I was so super excited. Arrow. Yeah.
They were so very distinct. I think that was like everyone could kind of find what their like their niche was. Like I usually like to play like a healer type. Like, oh, there's like 9 different kind of healers that you could get into. And there's like every different play style if you want to play something super passive or super aggressive or whatever. So, yeah, I definitely felt that.
So we've seen the game grow a lot. Let's just dig right into the grand finals. You were at a watch party. Did you get a chance to watch them, Bad Kitty?
Yeah, I got to watch, and the energy was insane, and it was just so much fun. And I knew going in it was going to be 4-0. I know that there was a lot of talk, and I was like, no, it's going to be a 4-0 sweep. Like, I knew that the boys were going to do it, and they destroyed. They did it. I am so proud of them.
Did you watch at home, or did you go out and watch with friends?
So I had a group of friends that we watched it over at my place because the nearest watch party that... Thanks for inviting me. I'm just kidding.
Everybody was invited. Yeah. What are you talking about?
I didn't see anything.
I didn't know about it. It's all good.
Yeah. Dang, okay.
The nearest one, I think, was like Berkeley or something.
Mm. Oh,
like,
yeah.
That like official wise, and the other one was like, I don't know, it was like through GameStop or something up in San Francisco.
That's the one I was at.
Oh, that's the one you're at.
Yeah, I was emceeing that thing.
Oh, nice. I wasn't gonna drive to SF.
I don't know, like driving all the way out there just for the one game feels a little bit like it's a lot of effort.
It is a lot of effort.
Driving.
It was. I had to do it.
I went back just like yesterday. I was in the Bay too, so it's just like, what if I waited to go back and then back again? So
it was I'm glad that everybody David, I don't, did you watch it?
Yeah, I missed it. I've been moving, so
yeah, you've been doing a bunch of stuff. Yeah. But like, it's cool that there's these pockets of people who, even if you're not going out to the watch party, are watching it socially. Yeah. Because it is so much more fun when you have other people invested in it. It's just same thing as like football, you know, you can watch football at home, you know, whatever, you know, Al Bundy it, you know, but then when you go out somewhere and watch it with people, that live electricity. So we did one at the we've done a lot of these watch parties, and we've done, you know, big ones, we've done small ones, we've done medium-sized one. This one was at a place called The Detour, which is a Brewcade. So if you're in Sacramento, it's kind of like Coin-Op.
Okay.
But it was packed with people from Sacramento all over, like South Bay all the way up to from Sacramento. It was the Shockwaves thing, and it was packed tight. And it's just, you don't get that every time, you know, a team fight happens. There's this,
Then
when the first kill comes on your side, yeah! And then when it's against you, oh, it gets really quiet in there. Like, and like Kitty was saying, I was just going in there thinking, like, I just want a 4-0. That's all I want is a 4-0. Everyone talks about, oh, Overwatch is anime. Let's get, you know, a 7-game barn burner. Yeah. No. Let's get this on. We're on ABC, you know. We got a time schedule to meet. Let's get in, get out. What did you think of the game? What was your analysis, Kyle, of the match itself? Charring. Yeah, we should mention, we stream this live on Twitch. So if you're listening to the podcast, there are people in here chatting at us and talking to us, and sometimes they give us notifications that are a little distracting.
So We watched. It was a exclusively online watch party. So me and a bunch of other High Noon podcast and Blackwatch Report friends were all hanging out in voice chat. I think we had like 8 or 9 people at one point. It was interesting because you get so many different perspectives, so many different people from different regions supporting different teams, and so you kind of get different like yes, yeah, no, and saying no at the same time. So that's always kind of cool. It was interesting. I was definitely expecting it to be a lot more close. I think. Just based off the fact that, like, I knew that Shock was going to be good, but I didn't think Vancouver was going to be quite as not good as they were. I don't know, like, they...
What do you mean they're not good? I think what you're selling them short is not good, but you're just...
No, I mean...
I think you're underselling how good the Shock are.
Yeah, I guess I was. I mean, like, after seeing the Atlanta game, like, that was close, but we knew Atlanta wasn't quite, like, a top three team.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of like...
Well, how do we know what a top three team was when they shifted the meta right before
right.
we headed
I mean,
in there? We threw in a brand new character. Yeah.
That's always been kind of the unfortunate thing about... I mean, last year was the same thing.
It's
it was like entirely new meta and everything was so drastically shifted.
It's like in the NBA, you get, you know, the teams work super hard on these strategies and then you get to the playoffs and like, oh, by the way, there's no three-point line
Yeah, exactly.
Anymore.
You have to choose from this little circle over
backwards.
Here.
Yeah. You cannot shoot the ball forwards. You can only shoot it backwards. What did you think of the double elimination format?
Oh, dude, last year sucked.
It
because
did,
you
right?
had two teams that were definitively, they got lucky. Like, you can't say it any other way other than, like, they kind of just got lucky. Now you could kind of weed through the BS, and, like, if it was a single elim, you would have had New York, Vancouver, which probably would have been kind of crap, too.
I didn't even think about this year's if it was single elimination.
Yeah, like that wouldn't have been good at all. You had such a great storyline with this lower bracket run. I think that's kind of an unparalleled like story of like this team lost in like the most heartbreaking fashion. They show that image of Moth's
moth
face.
Oh, my God. Every and time they showed it, like
that's a
Moth has
point,
some
right?
crazy fans.
Yeah.
The dude, people love him. And in the at the watch party, every time they showed that, because they showed it like 8 times, just everyone goes, oh.
And like you see that the juxtaposition between that shot and then his face when they come in the next, I think it was literally the next day or something for the loser bracket. He's just like, not happening. Not again.
Mm-hmm.
And 4-0, 4-0, 4-0, 4-0.
Yeah,
like you get such a better storyline with a double elim bracket,
I'm
and
not,
like you don't have that weird best of three of best of fives thing that
yeah,
they tried to do last year as well.
Exactly.
I
you
always
one day.
Prefer double elim mm-hmm. in tournaments. It just makes more sense.
You feel like you're getting like because anything could happen, and I'm
yeah.
not saying
yeah.
that the Atlanta match was a fluke, so to speak, but I don't think that was peak Shock. I think you know they
yeah. no yeah.
and everybody has a bad day,
mm-hmm.
and I think in a tournament setting. You should be allowed to have one bad day and still be able because it's still a tougher road.
Yeah, you still like, got to recover.
It's
yeah.
not like they get anything for free working through the lower bracket. They got two extra matches, and then
yeah.
they just have to be killers that whole way through and play perfect.
Yeah, otherwise that's it. Yeah, no, for sure. I think like Kyle said, like if you have it like how they did last year, it's super easy for a team to just be like, oh crap, like where did that come from? And all of a sudden you have like this team that should not be in the grand finals, you know, or semifinals, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you shouldn't be there. Like, not to discredit your hard work, but you shouldn't be there.
Yeah. Did you just watch the Shock matches, Kitty, or were you able to kind of keep your eye on the rest of the Overwatch League?
As
far as playoffs go.
a little bit of both. I definitely watched when New York was on, and I watched when Vancouver was on. But for the most part, yeah, I watched when the boys were on.
Did you see any other teams that kind of, like, took you by surprise or any highlight moments from the playoffs for you?
None that are coming to mind, but if one pops up later, I'll let you know.
I got one for sure, and I kind of want to open it for discussion, is those loser interviews they were doing.
Jae-Hung Toby, dude, that was...
That's exactly where I was going. I made David and Emma, like they're Overwatch fans, Shock fans, because, you know, they must like me. But I make them watch stuff every
obligated.
Once in a while. Yeah, they're contractually obligated Shock fans. So I was like, you guys have to watch this because it was one of the most pure, raw moments I'd seen sports in a while.
Yeah.
It matched, like, remember the Wimbledon where the two lady tennis players had shared, like, a big moment. It was really big recently. It was like that level. Mm. And people were got upset about it. So basically what happened was, you know, Seoul Dynasty lost. They had two of their star players go. They were doing these things where you'd go to the back and be interviewed, like it's an exit interview. And the guy just started breaking down and crying. And like it was one of those kind of uncomfortable to watch moments in a way. And for me, like, it's uncomfortable, yeah. But you're like, damn, this guy cares.
Yeah.
They want it back.
Yeah, they want this. They're going to come back next year. You know, it builds storylines, and then you get the other half, which is a lot of people saying, oh, that's cruel. Mm-hmm. They should not be doing these interviews.
Yeah, so, like, I heard some, I can't remember who it was, but someone said basically, like, what they did there is they kind of, like, you've now just gotten and sealed in your fan base with those players for the longest time. Like, if anyone was remotely a fan of Seoul Dynasty, after seeing those two players and, like, the emotion and how much they cared, like, you can't just, you know, not be a fan anymore. Like, you're just so emotionally connected with those players and that passion that you have to be a fan and you're going to be a diehard fan. And so it might have been a bit rough for the players, but it helped them in the long run because now they're more popular and more, even more loved. And then for the teams as well, you now just have more fans because they can empathize with your players and that struggle and that you know, feeling like you got close but not close enough.
Yeah, from the staff side, like, it's all about winning. Like, you really want your team to win, and from a social media perspective, you don't want to distract from the storylines. Like, I'm there to tell Shock stories through social media and act as a conduit. So you can't really force things. And, you know, last year was tough, you know, because we're a middle of the pack team. We still were able to have fun moments like Baby Bay Challenge or, you having Dante, he's a content goldmine. Like, he's eating a hamburger without taking the wrapper off or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, so when he throws a bone like that, you're like, oh, manna from heaven. Like, we have content to play with and stories to build. And then this team, everything wrote itself because you got Super, who really became a giant personality.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, beyond just being a crazy player. I mean, that's the Super he's always been.
Right.
But he really just got comfortable on stream and, you know, people. And so every time he put the mic in his hand, we're just like, all right, get the Twitch clips ready because we're going to have our content for the next 3 weeks every time this guy touches the microphone. And then, you know, we had the Sinatra MVP storylines.
Yeah. The Sinatra story is, like, I feel like one of I mean, you have so many good stories. You've got the Sinatra story and then the Rascal story, which are two, like, very different, but, like, equally as, like, impactful. Like, I think the most, like, memorable moment for me was seeing Sinatra on stage, like, trying to calm himself down, knowing that he had, like, so much pressure on him, and he was just so hyped and, like, shaking. He's just, like, trying to breathe and keep it together because he had, like, obviously, he had expectations for being kind of a core member of the team, but also now he's MVP, and so you expect an MVP performance from this dude, and then he comes out and delivers on that. Like, that's, like, the best thing to see.
Yeah. I think one thing that frustrates me a little bit about the Overwatch community, because I see and get to hear it all. I don't know if I get
Ooh,
to.
Tell
I
us.
I
what
to.
Is it?
Well, I mean, nothing, like, internal. I'm talking about just from people online, and it's this whole bench mentality. Like, in the NBA or whatever, it doesn't seem to be as, like, defined, but you put a guy on the bench for two games, and all of a sudden, like, anytime you post anything, you got the fans like, oh, when's he going to play again? When's he going to play again? It's like, I don't know. Like, when the meta shifts to
exactly.
be, like, you got to trust the coaches. Like, Krusty is an insanely talented mind, and all these coaches to their own, you know, got there for a reason. So if they're not playing a guy, it's probably for a pretty good reason. And when Overwatch is constantly throwing wrenches into your plans by tweaking a big update, a character's not always going to be...
Or nerfing or buffing characters constantly. Yeah.
And people, you know, talk about, you know, the Shock. Why'd you do 5 DPS? Why'd you do this? How come you did this? Like, everything we've ever done has been questioned.
Oh, yeah.
You know, from the first announcement, to like, oh, why'd you sign guys who can't even play through halfway through the season? Like, they're not even proven. You know, these guys aren't even be any good. To why'd you sign so many DPSs? It's always just something different people complain about, but they don't understand, like,
there's a method to madness.
There's a method. There's a process, and there's reasons. Like, all those different DPS guys, yeah, there's some overlap, but guys like Rascal are masters of characters like Mei, and who would have predicted that Mei would be such a huge character to have?
Yeah,
Striker flexing over and just becoming a baller Reaper, like, you know, who would have known? And but the scary thing is that you know, we saw Architect Flex to, like, our team had so much crossover.
Oh, my God. They did so good.
We played every 10 players. We played each player. Even Nevix got some stage time in that playoff run. Against playoff caliber teams, we threw in Super. We got him off the bench. We threw in Nevix. We threw in all these guys you're not used to seeing, and they still dumpstered people. So
yeah, because I think it was after the their interviews after the it was like the post game interviews after the grand finals. It was Super who even like reiterated, you know, like, hey, like, even though I'm kind of on the bench right now and these other players are on the bench right now, it doesn't mean like we don't have value for the team, you know, just because we, you know, specialize in certain characters that aren't in the meta right now, it doesn't mean that the meta's not going to change, you know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And he's 100% correct. You know, it sucks, right? Because you'd like to, you know, be playing, but you know. Reinhardt is not the double shield that's needed right now.
Right.
So,
well, that's the cool thing about the Shock is I've been to events where, you know, Baby Bay wasn't playing, you know, but he's still there and he's still supporting and he's in the back and he's watching the match and he's cheering them on. And then during halftime, they come in and he's like, all right, guys, this is what you got to do. And like, that's the cool thing about the Shock is they're so team oriented that it's like, whatever is good for the team, that's what we're gonna do.
Yeah, and it just comes down to the foundation that gets laid, like the environment that they're in the coaching staff, you know, making sure everybody's heard and stuff, because that team is solid. Like,
yeah,
and the players we've had in the past, like, you see they're all still really close friends.
Oh yeah.
You know, even though, you know, they move on to play at other teams to get, you know, more play time, but like Baby Bay and Sleepy and all the, even Nomi and Dak are still interacting and engaging with our guys pretty regularly.
Yeah, that's cool.
So it's like a little family. So getting back to that game, man, the 4-0 was pretty brutal. Yeah. Highlights from there for me was definitely Architects on Eichenwald.
Yeah.
That
from
was
from the chandelier.
That attack, that Bastion. Fucking Bastion,
oh my
man.
God.
The place lost its mind when he did whatever that jump was to get onto the chandelier.
I love when they talked about that, because he was like, oh yeah, no, we had practiced this in scrimmage, you know, Maywall to get up there. And then I realized, wait, Bastion can just get up there on his own. And he just did it in the moment, which is also just insane. You know, like, not planned, just like, yeah, I can do this. And it just... Just baller status.
I think the on Eichenwald, the attack, I think it was... Shock almost got like full held or something was ridiculous. Like, it was so, like, it was easily their map to lose right there. And then I think Rascal had just like the perfect barrage, and then everything just kind of went perfectly for them. And that was kind of the cool thing I saw, is like every single person on the team had just like a different carry moment. Because like, there's certain teams you see like, okay, well, you're if your one player isn't doing it, then you're just looking awful. But like, there was so much like picking up slack, and like, if one person's getting hard focused, another person can easily take up, you know, that open space and kind of just do work with that. So that was always really cool to see. Like, every single player had their moment.
Yeah, it was exciting to see like Smurf specifically get a lot of those moments. Like, there would be just some of those times where it's a clutch fight. We might even be down one, and then somehow Smurf just lights up the kill feed.
Yeah.
And he didn't really get too many of those moments leading up, and a lot of play time early on in the season.
And like, and the thing too with him is like, he's the one who's setting up every giant Sinatra 4K.
That's right.
Because when he's going up in the meteor strike, like, you need to get the halt in to pull everyone back together. And so like, every Sinatra highlight reel is really just Smurf being a great teammate and enabling his teammate to do work, which is awesome.
I thought Choi, like,
oh, he did so good.
You could see from his first Sigma match to Grand Finals, like, legitimate
so
growth.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see why he's a top level player like that, because, you know, as far as everyone knew, he was a D.Va one trick. You know, he's always on the top 10. Like, you know, he's a legit solid player. And then he'd pull out Flex to the Hog and stuff, but who knew he'd be able to pick up Sigma and just play it at such a high level.
He just wrecked.
Yeah.
He wrecked his Sigma. Like, you want to talk about an ace in the hole. Like, oh my God. There were so many plays and so many, you know, takes that only happened because of, you know, he got the first pick, or, you know, he played with Sinatra to, you know, get rid of, you know, the support backline. And it was just insane to watch.
Yeah,
was so cool.
He was the one who I'm like, I swear if Choi doesn't get MVP, I'm going to be mad. Like, I'm hoping they don't do, like, whatever the PR, you know, you have it Sinatra again. Like, Sinatra played well, Rascal played well, like, everyone played well. But, I like, Choi just had, I think, yeah, we were talking about the, he had two different ult negations on Sigma.
Oh, that's right.
Both blizzards, and both of them were like pretty high impact if they would have landed like at pretty key moments.
Yeah.
And you don't see it that often with Sigma. I think he's like the only player we've seen get like...
It's tricky to do that too. That. Yeah. Like, it's not easy.
It's
like,
not defense matrix.
It's not. Yeah, D.Va, you can eat up stuff all day long. Sigma's tougher.
Sometimes we try and tell our stories through like the stats. So I'll message Captain Planet every once in a while to ask him for something. And one of the more interesting ones was Troy, when Goats was going around, at least had the second number of like ults negated as D.Va, but with like a quarter of the playtime. Because I think it was like we were going for all time, like who's eating the most ults, and he didn't obviously have a lot of playtime in season one, and he had still already had less than three or four from catching it. And then I think it kind of, once the meta shifted, the numbers got skewed. What did you think overall just about Sigma as a character and brought into the
I hate his feet so much.
Are you one of those?
Like, there's only one skin with boots, okay? And that's the Talon one. And I'm like, no, there needs to be
You got the foot thing?
No. Like,
I think it's funny.
Ugh, God. I don't like his feet. It's like horror movie status. It's like floating across the room like... No. It's just not okay.
I nothing his feet. I just don't give a shit. I don't
pH level 7 on
I
that.
I just don't care. It's whatever. Feet, no feet, I don't. He could have no feet. He could just be ankles. I still don't care.
They creep me out.
Yeah.
Well, besides his feet, I guess is there.
I think a lot of he's an interesting one because like they did it last year where they brought in a new hero like right before playoffs and completely skewed everything. I think it wasn't so drastic. Like we saw, I think most of the other heroes were kind of the same across, I think stage four and playoffs. So it wasn't as drastic, but it was still a little bit weird. I will always just never want giant patches between. Or, like, in any place besides, like, season half, like, between stage two and three or at the end of the season.
Yeah.
That just always feels so awkward for me.
I was going to say, like, what do we think about that? Because they did that last season and they did that this season. Throwing in, not only a new meta, but a new character right before, grand final. Is that something that, like, does that add to the drama? Or is that something, like, just wait until the off season?
It definitely adds to the drama.
It adds to the drama, but in like, a good way.
Not like, necessarily a good way.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that kind of, like, separates... In a certain way, what you do is you separate teams who, like Vancouver, were just really, really good at GOATs because they had been playing that GOATs meta since Contenders and were, incredibly skilled at it. And so now you're now testing them, not only their ability to perfect an old meta, but also, like, be kind of quick on their feet. I guess it's like if you're interviewing someone on a job, you don't just ask them what they've done previously. You kind of throw a new idea at them and see how they work with something quickly. You do get that as a side result, but it always feels weird to like if Overwatch League season 2019 was like the GOATs season, we have this like random stage at the end where Washington Justice got really good because of good DPS play. And then also like things just kind of change. I it feels weird to have your playoffs and finals not represent like the entirety of the season and like the best teams the whole season.
Right, that makes sense.
I think that's where the coaching becomes the most important because mechanical skilled players are one thing and then it's the brains behind it and being able to swap over and create new strategies quicker than everybody else. And like you have to adjust very quickly. Like the worst spot to be in is after a big patch and be the first two teams playing. That's the one that definitely is the worst. And then you saw like all the Bastion stuff you started seeing towards the end of this meta was like really perfected and stuff by New York.
That's one of my favorite things about when you like the benefit of getting early meta is you get team identities. Like, you have New York, who's, like, this random, like, okay, we're really good at this whole Bastion thing. Or, like, you had Shanghai Dragons, like, are great at the triple DPS kind of thing. Yeah. Like, everyone had their identity. Like, that's my favorite point is, like, when teams have their own kind of looks, and it's not all just a homogenous, like, we all play the same heroes at the same way. We're just slightly better at cooldown management or whatever.
I think what he says here, Moth is the best main support in the world and 9K the best coach in the world. It's very true. I don't know. I still go back and forth on it. It does keep things interesting. I think what sucks about the timing of it all was as GOATs got patched out, it was already getting like countered in game naturally.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way metas are supposed to shift. Like, to a degree, if something is ridiculously broken, get in and fix it.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you would have let GOATS play itself out, I really think triple DPS and teams like the Dragons would have gotten better. Like, they won stage three because they were able to, and that wasn't like a fluke. It was natural. It wasn't because of a patch or anything. They really got mastered that style, and it was effective against GOATS. And if there wasn't a patch, all the other teams would have had to take notice and, you know, made a shift towards what they were doing or something to counter them even better. So I don't know. I think maybe they meddle a little too much.
Yeah, there's a lot of pros and cons to it. Every single time they bring in a new character, didn't matter if it was Sombra or if it was Doomfist or even Anna, like, there's always reworks that have to happen. I know all of my Reaper friend, all my, like, Reaper main friends are so happy right now because Reaper is just, you know, he is hot right now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, definitely, you always play the what-if game, you know, because, I mean, if you look at the very beginning of Overwatch, I mean, Bastion had, what, his own little tank shields and all this craziness. So, you know, there's definitely need for rework sometime. But with bringing in these new characters, though, it definitely just, it changes the game so much, dramatically.
I think, like, mid-season, if they're going to do it during the season, I think mid-season is probably the best one. Because then, like you were, like Kyle, you were saying, you know, you don't get all these random teams all of a sudden jumping up because they're just good at this one thing. Like, you get more of a gradual growth and change and stuff like that. I don't know. To me, I think a new character probably shouldn't be in the meta until the off season.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they really rushed, I feel like, Sigma into there.
I don't know. It's weird because, like, on one hand, from the perspective that I have is, like, I don't play the game that much. I watch it, and so I get to kind of see the big picture a lot. And so I can kind of see, and I don't feel like how fatiguing players were from playing GOATS or how just annoyed people are with, like, double shield meta and stuff like that. You don't get to... I don't experience that because I'm not playing, what, 12 hours a day of this game, day in and day out. Like, I want to play something other than Reaper. I'm really good at hitscan things, but I haven't been able to play Ashe, Widow, McCree, anything in months and months.
Yeah.
And so that... I think that that's, like... I like the idea of everything being constant, but I also love the idea of everything always being in flux. In the other, like, I want one of the two.
Yeah.
I either want one meta for the entire season and then through playoffs and then completely change it up, or I want nonstop, like, maybe not week by week, but every stage tweak something slightly different, and so teams have to continually, like, re-innovate and re-figure things out, and that way you get... more creativity from team comps. You get coaching staffs have to work and be more creative on trying to figure out what's the best thing. It helps the viewership because you're not seeing the same six heroes versus the same six heroes all the time.
It's funny because, like, as a meta is prevalent, it's like the enemy. It's the devil. Everybody hates it. And then when it goes away, even for a very short time, everyone's all like, remember how great GOATS was?
Yeah.
GOATS
was so entertaining.
Yeah.
So much strategy in your Zarya grabs. Like, I don't know. I think let's move to after the aftermath. Mm-hmm. So Shock ended up getting the 4-0. A lot of people watched. It was on ABC Network. I think I saw it peak at around 350 on Twitch, 350K. It was up there. A lot of people were watching it. It got tons of news and press media coverage. What do you guys just think of Overwatch in general right now? Do you think it's feigning in its popularity or growing? I kind of want to target this one towards Bad Kitty because like you're in the cosplay scene, and I remember when the game first came out, like, everybody was obsessed with this game and the characters. Is it still as, like, rabid right now?
I think that there's a strong community for it, and those who are, you know, still active and avid, most definitely. I think that whenever they bring in new skins, you know, there's kind of a new fire that emerges, especially with Halloween coming up.
Yeah.
And they've already showed up. Did you see the Symmetra and Genji skins?
Yes.
No, not yet.
Those are the
Illidan Genji and the...
Yep. And then Tirande, right?
I don't think those are Halloween ones, though. Those were BlizzCon exclusives. Yep.
Oh, they're the BlizzCon. Oh, there you go. So we still we have some more to look forward to.
Exactly.
But yeah, so I definitely, when there's new skins that pop up, and you know, there's someone that's like, you know, oh, I'm a huge Mercy fan, I got to do all the Mercy ones, or I'm, you know, Sombra fan and do all the Sombra ones. So definitely there. But I definitely think it'll probably explode again, hopefully with Overwatch 2.
So you think that's what everyone's expecting?
I'm hoping Overwatch 2 is what we'll get. We'll get the next Diablo. We'll get Overwatch 2 at BlizzCon this year. Because if you think about it, you know, there's a good portion of their team right now that usually is working on Overwatch is not working on Overwatch right now. Like, they are working on Numero 2. Like, Sigma is probably going to be the last new hero in Overwatch, if I had to take a guess.
I want
to
know, because I have a theory on this, and I've heard things that it's a completely separate, non-competitive PvE, like all of the archives, like, you know, the Halloween one, or where you're doing the Blackwatch run, or the what's the Origin one, or whatever.
Yeah, Junkenstein's Revenge, you have Uprising, and oh god, what was the Blackwatch one called?
The Rialto Blackwatch one.
Yeah.
I don't know. That, I feel like that, so I,
a
that
retribution.
Was what,
there
yes,
you go.
that was what I heard the rumor was, and that's what seems the most logical to me, because it has to be a change in game. I don't know what, like, I've heard people talk about, like, Overwatch 2, it would be like Overwatch, but a separate version of it. I'm wondering, like, why would you, like, when you've got League of Legends, it's been out for, what, 12 years or something at this point. CS is like 20 years, 30 years old almost. Why would you not just update the game as it is? Because, like, Overwatch is a live game, so you can make those changes to the core game. And so if you're going to release another Overwatch game, at least I have a strong feeling like it'll be an entirely different gameplay. Like, it won't be a hyper competitive 6v6. It'll be like a me and four friends or something like that, I think.
I'd be down if it was like co-op campaign. Mm-hmm. Like, because we have Michael Chu and all the writers saying how much, you know, lore they have yet to share. And I'm like, well, share it. I want to read it. I want to play it. I'm ready. I want more lore. I want more backstory. I want more animated shorts. And then I love the events, but man, I wish there was like a few different events.
They're the same thing.
No offense to May Snowball, but they could do so many cool things for the winter season.
I think the problem with that is you're limited to a certain. I think that when Jeff did a interview with someone, he mentioned how like absolutely ridiculous it was to try to be able to make those Retribution and Uprising things, because the game was just not, like, the engine was just not prepared for that, and so you have to do so much extra things just to get it, like, able to run this idea. And so I think, like, now that they have this knowledge that those, like, PBE things are huge, now they can kind of, like, okay, we're gonna build this up from the ground again with all these things that we learned, and they have, like, good evidence of, like, how many people played Retribution versus Uprising and stuff like that. So
from the esports side of everything, it's weird, because part of me is like the gamer side, just in general Overwatch fan. The other is like from a how do we grow the esports scene. And so hearing about, you know, maybe more focus on the campaign is a little scary, because I want people to get interested in Overwatch again, because it feels like when it first came out, for the first couple years, it was huge.
Yeah,
like, the game was way bigger, the player base was massive, but the esports scene was very underdeveloped and bad. Like, even in the Seagull days.
It's almost flip-flopped now.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, now we have this great infrastructure for esports, but the casual player base is kind of falling off a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the esports will continue to thrive and be really well, especially what they're doing, the changes of the new season and how they're actually going about it versus, you know, the how they're just doing the games in general. But something they could also do is, I mean, I would be down to do this, like, where I would pay as a season pass, you know, to get those exclusive game modes like Retribution or Uprising and whatnot, because, you know, they're doing this, it's free content, right?
Right,
so imagine what they could provide if it was like, oh, here's the season pass, which then you can get, you know, these modes and whatnot. Which would be kind of interesting, too. They could always do that approach to it, you know, while keeping Overwatch.
Yeah.
Or if they did something and they went to like a almost like a Fortnite model. where you...
Oh, please, don't
Why did you say the F word here?
The game, you know, is free, and then the content that you pay for this content, you pay for the season pass, you pay for skins or whatever like that. I don't, you know, do you think that would maybe... If it becomes a free game,
I've thought about that.
Interesting.
I don't know whether they'll announce an Overwatch 2 or whatever. That's a little scary because I mean, if they keep it on the same engine and everything, that's the thing I love about Overwatch more than anything. I think as just a gamer, like the shooting is smooth.
Oh yeah.
The movement, the character type, like it's just a very slick, smooth, gratifying shooter.
It's so beautiful.
So if they I hope they keep it on the same engine. Like, don't change it too much. Don't make it look too much better. Just like, I'd almost want like a Overwatch expansion pack where they're like, we're gonna double the characters or just something like that.
Yeah,
it's gonna be the same game, we're gonna double the maps and the characters, because I think that's one of the big differences between, like, you brought up League before. League stays relevant and the meta is like healthier, I think, because there's so many more characters.
Yeah, but I think someone brought this up too, is that like why Counter-Strike is easy to balance and why League is easy to balance. With League, you have changing and introducing new heroes or legends at, you know, champions at different points, but the map is always the same.
Yeah.
I mean, you maybe make a minor tweak here and there. Counter-Strike, the same guns basically since 1998. You know, the movement, the mechanics, all the same, but the maps are new and change every so often. Overwatch is like you get both, and so it's way harder to balance those two kind of things because you've got new heroes, hero changes, map changes as well at the same, and so that's like, it's super hard to like balance that. And I feel like it'll be a standalone $30 to $40 just Overwatch campaign. It's gonna be like Overwatch colon something, and it's not gonna be Overwatch 2, it's not gonna be a different name, it's gonna be like Overwatch colon Origins or
I gotta
Discover,
say that would be
whatever.
The most disappointing.
Really? Really?
I think so. If just like a solo expansion campaign, I don't think that sounds super fun.
Yeah,
like, are we talking 4-player co-op?
That's
like
what I would assume it would be. It's literally like a well-developed, with more story and more interesting mechanics and stuff like that, with like four friends or whatever.
I hope not.
But see, I can see where that would be disappointing as a player. But going back to the other side, you know, your other side of the coin, as somebody who's in esports, that would kind of alleviate the stress of like, okay, now we have to, you know, accommodate Overwatch 2. What's going to change?
Yeah.
The core game's not going to change from an esports perspective. It's just PvE that we're getting.
Yeah. That's a whole nother side of it too. Like, let's say they do introduce a new one, is that just what they're gonna do for Overwatch League next year? Like, well, I guess if they make an announcement this year, we're not gonna see that game till next Christmas.
You're not gonna see it for a while, probably.
So if they announce it, we still got, you know, another 2 years of Overwatch 1.
Maybe they drop it in the middle of season 3. By the way, this
is double the hero pool. Congratulations.
Have fun.
All new heroes.
Everyone takes fall damage now. Congratulations.
Even Zenyatta.
What do you guys think of the big storylines heading into season 3 in the off season? So there's going to be Rosterpocalypse. It's already kind of beginning. Mm-hmm. I haven't been able to keep too much track of it, but I think Washington's been making some moves. DC, what did they do?
So
they just let go of a bunch.
Washington
of
Justice basically let go of their entire coaching staff, and then so far we've heard from Ark and Sleepy, their support line, that they're not necessarily dropped from the team, but their contract has expired and they're all looking for new options. So that's kind of
Ark too? I missed that.
Yes.
Okay.
I think that was,
I saw Sleepy's message today. He was like, for the first time, like, in my career, I'm looking for team. It was a little bummer.
Yeah. Aww. And I think Ark had to clarify that, like, he is still with the team, but he's able to look for other offers. He's not 100% dropped. But, like, we saw that from LA Gladiators as well, because they had their huge, like, shift away from Sentinels managing their team, and now everyone who was previously contracted with LA Gladiators has new contracts because their boss has changed or in some sort of way, which is weird.
Are you talking about the Gladiators and the Sentinels relationship?
Yeah, well, because...
Because Sentinels were over it. Like, they were managing their social media
right.
and all sorts of stuff, and now they've broken that relationship.
And now it's just Kroenke Group managing, and so every... like Depay, the head coach, who everyone's like, why would Depay ever leave? Like, they did so well this year. Like, there's no reason for him to leave. But no, it's just, I mean, like, we talked to the manager of the Gladiators Academy team, and he's like, no, it's literally just a formality because of the way that the contracts are being run. So it seems like most teams and players are doing that now, where, like, your contract's up. Everyone who had a 1+1 contract, it's going to expire right now if they didn't re-sign. And so everyone's just kind of like letting it feel it out and then seeing who wants to stay, I guess.
Giving Gladiators some due just as an organization, like, I feel like once they announced all of the teams and there was two LA teams, it was pretty clear Valiant jumped out to a huge lead because they had the momentum of Immortals.
Right, an established roster.
They had a lot of stuff. They had big stars, and they were like the champions of LA, it felt like.
Mm-hmm. It's the Lakers and the Clippers.
Yeah.
And then just through Immortals kind of falling apart, I think, you know, they had a lot of drama and controversy and not performing so well. And then the team over at Gladiators just was on point, like from their social media to their graphics to, you know, the rallying behind the shields up. Like, they really, I mean, it was my job. I look at the analytics from all the Overwatch League teams, and they were clearly top table with their engagement and the quality of production they were putting out.
And all of the people on that team, once they had the huge Sentinels leaving thing, like, there was a bunch of people who worked with LA Gladiators are now, like, a lot of their graphic design team I saw are, like, now looking for work. And, like, everyone is, like, this is one of the most talented people I've seen in the industry. So they clearly hired really, really, really talented people.
Yeah.
And it, like, it shows with, you know, the result they were able to get.
I think they'll be one to watch next year. And and especially when it comes, for me, looking at the social media, they were handed a golden egg, you know, at the end of this season, and we'll see how they maintain through the off season and how they, you know, they did like the huge debate earlier, and like, you know, they've just done some notable things. They've separated themselves from other teams, so I'm just curious to see if they're going to be that level of fun and if the Valiant's going to kind of pick steam back up. But what are you looking at next year? What teams do you think are going to bounce back strong?
I don't know who, like, I don't have any indication yet of who's going to be good because I don't know, like, which coaches have been picked up or, like, I feel like we're still a little early on. I'm hoping Justice gets a coach that I know, and maybe my boy Chu with Team Envy. I think if they pick up someone like him, I know him and I know, you know, the results that they've put out. I think, like, if I know who they're picking up as a head coach, I can know, like, okay, they're going to build a good team. I can have faith in this person and, like, they're going to do good things. But, like, there's a lot of teams I'm like, who's blowing it up? Who's going to just completely restart, you know, maybe not ground zero, but, like, start on, like, the second floor and then build up from there again.
I think one of the more exciting things that comes across too is, like, seeing the tier two talent and people come up, the call-ups. And then you see people who, I think we saw a lot more in season one than we'll see in season two. Like, in season one, you had a lot of huge names that I think weren't necessarily peak competitors. Like, no offense to Seagull and IDDQD and XQC. Like, they're all great personalities. You want them on your team because you can market the hell out of them. They can have success. They're in that realm, but they're just a cut below, I think, what the top tier talent can be. And so we saw a lot of those dudes, the OGs, kind of fall out of favor. This year, like, we got to see huge call-ups, like the whole Runaway squad. You had guys like Moth and Violet and, you know, Flower, I think, was his first season. Are there any other, like, killers out there that you think are going to be making a huge impact? Or are we going to get the same players?
Oh, I think next year is going to be huge. I think you've got this huge storyline with Alarm, who is signed to Fusion's Academy team and is... Most of the people who have played with and against him agree he's probably, like, top five Overwatch League caliber. And he's signed with Fusion, and so if Fusion want to sign him, they'll have to pay him whatever the next, whoever is trying to also get him, plus, you know.
Oh, it's like a matching thing.
Well, right? Yeah, it's like the right to match. Yeah. And so, like, if, I don't know, who else? Maybe Houston Outlaws. I mean, they would probably love a top five flex support. And they had lots of money. They got their new owner in. They want to just keep bringing it up. Okay, 150K, 200K, 250K. Now Philly's like, all right, I can do 250K, 300. You want me to go 300 just to keep my own player? Like, they keep having to match that. So I think that's definitely a storyline, you know.
Where is this alarm guy from? Is he a Korean
player? He's a Korean player. He has basically been with Fusion University since, I think they were created, like, start of 2018. So he's been with them for the longest time. It's just been... it's just a cut above every other player in contenders right now.
Yeah. Well, talking to other teams that need to step up, what do you think about the Mayhem? They can't get any worse.
No.
Oh, they were
they've been teasing a rebrand forever. I think maybe they have the most growth potential. I mean, obviously, team at the bottom would have the most growth potential. But still, I think if they come out next year with some big signings and the change in color scheme, they could be a pretty fire team.
I think they tried to do that at the end of this year. I mean, they have, what, like 5 new players on their roster that they didn't even start the season with? And so it is weird that they kind of tried to rebuild super late in and go with this kind of all-Korean team. But from what I've seen, like, I don't think they're going to rebuild at all. They maybe add, like, 2 players because they just added a bunch, and I think they're probably going to just kind of see how that takes them because all these players are mostly untested. Like, they had a couple of good looks here and there, but I honestly just feel like they're going to have another season of mediocrity. They're just going to sub 15 again. I think they're gonna sub 15 until something huge happens and something big changes. Like, I think maybe they'll have like one stage where they're like, maybe they could do it, and then they just fall apart.
These home games are gonna change everything in 2020.
Oh yeah,
like, yeah. I can't 100%.
I think the most exciting thing for me, you know, watching the Shock play on the big stage, was that's a whole nother thing. Like, you get acclimated to Blizzard Arena. Like, it's the same fans pretty much every time. You watch the broadcast, it's the same guys in the front row every time. Yeah. You got the same signs. Like, it's like home. It was home games for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they say Gladiators might have had a few more people cheering for them in Valiant, but by the end of the season, you know, we had more fans than them. Like, it's just the way it goes. But when we start getting into these home matches, like, the pressure, it's a whole nother level of mental fortitude that's going to be pulled out of these guys. We'd never seen our guys get to play on the stage in Philly. Like, that was a full week of promo. Like, these guys are getting interviewed, walking from here to there. Like, that's a lot of pressure for these kids. And I was wondering, like, who's going to fold? Who's going to overperform? Who's going to this, that? And they all just stepped up. So, and that's a level of confidence heading into the next season. It's just a big advantage. I think anybody who's played in that big arena and got to have that kind of media attention on them, so Fusion, Spitfire, Titans and Shock now have a huge mental advantage heading into the next seasons.
I think this next season is going to be where, like, I feel like this season is where we saw great coaching staffs, like, lead teams to victories. I think this next season might be where we see good management carry teams, because I think that there's very much a possibility that we have badly managed teams or, like, inefficiently managed teams, and that's just going to screw up actual results in game because this player got here super late and they're super jet lagged. Like, maybe this one team, like, maybe next year, I feel like Justice is going to be very well managed, and, like, they're going to, you know, get into the city like a week and a half ahead of time. They're going to have a week, like, you know, 4 days just to get, you know, acclimated to the time zones, and then they can start scrimming. And then you're going to have teams, like, if they're playing on Saturday, they fly in on Thursday or, like, maybe Friday, and they're just going to be destroyed physically and mentally because they're so exhausted. Like,
yeah.
I feel like that's where it's going to come.
Travel's going to have a huge factor in it. And a lot of these guys have never traveled in their life, too. So it's you know, or it's a first-time passport, and that's going to be a huge factor. I hope they'll be okay. Like, I really hope they'll be okay.
It really does come down to discipline. Like, I've seen different – I've been a part of a lot of different teams across different esports, and the successful ones are always the most disciplined ones. It's always the ones that have a culture. Some teams don't have that, but, like, I know for sure, like, Shot Krusty and Chris, their GM, like, they have a very structured – it's a system. It's like being back in school. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go to school, there's a system. You wake up at this time. You get there and do this, and, they optimize your performance in that way. Some people are super relaxed. They want to be more of the friend than the coach or whatever. The egos play a huge part of this thing. You get players who think, oh, you can't tell me nothing, you know, because, you know, I'm this or that. So it's checking the ego to the side, dedicating yourself to the team, like not being disgruntled when you're a bench player. Like Stryker could have easily been just a disgruntled, you know, person, you know, knowing what he's capable of and how he didn't get to play. But no, he just flipped the switch. When it was his time, he hit the stage running, and I don't think they could have won without him.
Yeah.
You can say the same for Architect. You can say the same for everybody. And then even the guys who don't get played much, like Nevix, they're in the practice room every day. It's not like they're, you know, just sitting at home twiddling their thumbs. Like, they're iron sharpens iron. And trust me, if, you know, Choi wasn't a golden god of what he was playing, Nevix could go up there and probably they'd still win. Like, It's pretty crazy how that all works. I think next year we're in store for it. I'm excited.
Oh yeah.
If you watch Overwatch, if you don't watch Overwatch and you listen to this episode, wow, you're a trooper.
Good lord. Like, I have no idea what's happening.
This is the weeds. I've been wanting to talk about, every time I want to talk about Overwatch League, and you know, these guys on my show, they know Overwatch, but they don't geek out over the different players and stuff. So thank you guys for being able to join, and I love the conversation. Let's start over here with Bad Kitty Cosplay. Where can the public find you on the social medias?
You guys can follow me on Instagram at Bad Kitty Cosplay, and then my Twitch will be up and running soon, but the page is there, and it's Bad Kitty. So yeah, check it out, guys.
What are you thinking about streaming? You doing some Overwatch?
I will most definitely do Overwatch. Overwatch is like a go-to. I can do it in my sleep.
We didn't even get to the nitty-gritty. You're a PC player?
I can do all of them. So I have accounts on every system for Overwatch, even the Switch.
What's your SR? What's your SR, though?
So my SR right now is in Masters High Diamond. I will eventually get to Grandmaster. Jeez. Eventually, but one of these days.
So are you going to carry me or what?
Oh, I can carry you. Yeah. So I'm support main and tank main, and if I have to play DPS, I can. But I just know way too many like really good DPS players that I don't need to do it.
Leave it to them.
Yeah,
I'm excited for these streams.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We'll be watching those. Kyle, man, what you got going on? You still developing your game?
Yeah, still working on my game. Still doing podcasty stuff. I do exclusively like tier 2 Overwatch contender stuff. So talking to interviewing people, and we got Gauntlet coming up. Yeah. So if you are looking for Overwatch stuff and you're like, I don't know what to watch, I don't think it's this weekend, but the weekend after, I think it's the 10th and 11th, the Gauntlet is coming live from the what would have been the Apex Stadium. You got all the new players up and coming, who everyone is going to fill their teams with next year. So if you want to get in early and find out who the next MVPs are, check out the Gauntlet. Check out Blackwatch Report.
Exciting.
Yeah.
David Webb, what are you promoting, man?
VastGG. Go check us out.
There we go.
VastGG on Twitter. I got some giveaways going on, some pirate giveaways, so go check out the Twitter. You can enter there. And, keep an eye out.
Video Game Bang is presented to you by Oblivion Comics and Coffee, Sacramento's number one spot for comics and coffee. You can go there, get a VGB Sunrise, and they will give you a Video Game Bang sticker. Also, keep your eye out for Curtis. If you're in Sacramento and you go to GameStops, he goes there and he just gives out VGB stickers and stuff, apparently. He loads his pockets and just goes and he's chatting with the people, man.
Hey,
so
nice.
And we got another little show we've been doing, too, called the Krakoa Cast. It's a comic book focused on the new House of X and Powers of X series. We've been really getting into that. Jonathan Hickman's masterpiece that's going to be rebooting the X-Men franchise, and then we're going to continue on and follow those storylines. It's going to be a lot of fun. I've really been enjoying getting back into comic books. I have stacks on stacks on stacks around the house, and I've never, you know, been getting into reading them, but now it's a different way of consuming them. I used to just read them straight through and not really think about, oh, who's writing this? Oh, you know, that's nice shading on the face there. I didn't look at it that way. And then you can, and it's super fun to get into. So I recommend you go to Oblivion Comics Coffee in the Sacramento area. Start a saver, because all these X-Men comics, they're already like in third and fourth print because they're all selling out. So don't just think you're going to get lucky and find one. Get on the saver program. Make sure you have one and try VGB Sunrise. And then also, our guys, I don't even know if they're official sponsor anymore, but I just got to shout them out. Mainframe.
Yeah, they're going to have some fire stuff.
They dropped some hot fire. They're going to start a crowdsourcing thing on the 7th to do this new loungewear stuff.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. I've been messaging them back and forth about it just because it's so good. I think I'm going to join their little crowdfund thing.
Yeah, they're joggers.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for joggers.
I'm all
it's
about
it. It's the male equivalent of yoga pants.
Exactly.
And I'm here for it. Man. It's a socially acceptable way that guys could wear yoga pants.
Yes. I'm glad you said it because that's exactly what it is. And then we're going to do a quick little after show. So if you guys listen to the show on the podcast on iTunes and all those good things, you can watch us live on twitch.tv/videogame_bang on Wednesday nights and Saturday nights. And if you're in the chat right now, you can catch up on past episodes of Video Game Bang on our website, bgbstudios.com, or on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, all those good places. You could be like cool people like Ruru2, Steven, Shrugoff, Drew and the TARDIS, all these fine folks joining us on the show, keeping us entertained while we do the podcast.
Shout out to Drew and the TARDIS for 28 months of subscriptions.
28
That's
months?
That's insane.
Good Lord. He come out to our last trivia night too, which we have a trivia night coming up again, right? When is our next one? The 14th? Yeah, it's the 14th. I had to pull up a calendar. We're doing a Halloween themed at Oblivion Comics.
Yeah, we are. Getting spoopy.
We're getting a little spoopy. So if you guys want to hang out with us and do some trivia at Sacramento's voted number one geek battleground. Did you see that? Sacramento News and Review.
Nice. I did see that. That's awesome.
Well, that's our show for Kyle, Kitty, Kavid, and Corey. You've just been banged.